This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone. The double helix structure of deoxyribonucleic acid, or DNA, was discovered just 65 years ago. But mankind has been playing with the notion of what makes us who we are for millennia. Twins, especially, played a prominent role in ancient mythologies. The founders of Rome, Remus and Romulus, twin brothers raised by a giant wolf. Castor and Pollux, half-twin brothers whose Gemini forms sparkle in the night sky. The birth of twins has been interpreted as good luck and as bad, and they themselves as two halves of the lightness and darkness of our nature. That's never stopped. You see it in sci-fi sagas like Star Trek.
Now, Data's evil twin plots to destroy the crew.
Back off. Go!
With the help of a lethal life force on Star Trek The Next Generation.
The Southern California woman who was dubbed the evil twin and convicted of plotting to kill her twin sister could be granted parole.
As vehicles for conflict, serendipity, and comedies of error.
They're cousins, my biblical cousins.
So if your mom is my mom, and my dad is your dad, and we're both born on October 11th, then you and I are like sisters. Sisters. Hallie. We're like twins.
Double trouble, what twin partners in crime are accused of doing.
But beyond mere novelty, multiple births can provide scientists deep insights into the age-old argument between nature and nurture. A documentary released this summer, Three Identical Strangers, tells the story of triplets David, Eddie, and Bobby, adopted by three different families and studied under highly unusual circumstances. Spoilers ahead.
They separated these boys at birth.
The parents had never been told that there were two other children.
What was the purpose?
Why? How could you not tell us?
They're trying to conceal what they did from the people they did it to.
When you play with humans, you do something very wrong.
Who would be evil enough to come up with something like this?
The secret study, orchestrated by psychologist Peter Neubauer, sought to examine how three distinct parenting styles might shape identical triplets reared apart. Not until the boys met by chance at age 19 did they learn how their lives had been manipulated for a trove of data that remains largely locked away in an archive at Yale. According to Dr. Nancy Siegel, the director of the Twin Studies Center at California State University at Fullerton, the unreleased study was likely inconclusive and definitely cruel.
Well, I think this was a very unethical study. Keep in mind that even though in those times the practice was that you don't encourage contact, but nevertheless, these children were never told they were twins, and most of these adoptive parents who were hungry for children would have gladly taken two. So to not tell people this very important aspect of their background, I think is just horrendous. It's really beyond my comprehension. And
why?
I know that. Because being a twin is a very important part of one's identity, one's knowledge of one's medical history. And I can tell you that having worked with hundreds of pairs of twins raised apart, just how happy they are to have met and how regretful they are that they lost all those years together.
Twin studies often capture the public imagination. but none quite like NASA's twin study, which tracked the genetic profiles of two astronaut brothers, one who spent a year in space while his twin lived on Earth. The media had a field day with this.
Scott Kelly and Mark Kelly are the only identical twin astronauts in history, but following a DNA-altering space mission, they may not be identical anymore.
A year in space has already made Scott 2 inches taller than his brother.
Study found 7% of Scott's genes did not return to normal after he returned to Earth 2 years ago.
So they're no longer identical twins?
The space travel altered genetic expression. It did not alter the DNA physically itself. When he returned to Earth, the vast majority of his genetic material returned to the way it was initially. See, this is a fascinating finding because why identical twins differ in the expression of some traits, that's what we need to find out. I think it'll fascinate your listeners to know that if you take diseases like schizophrenia or multiple sclerosis or diabetes, you'd expect that the correlation should be about one if they have the same genes, but it's closer to 40-50%. Something has to trigger the expression in one and keep it quiet in the other. And identical twins reared apart or identical twins who differ in some way can help us find these environmental effects that might help us control and manage disease.
You've profiled other twins that have been shaped by extreme events. Could you tell us about the subjects of your book, Accidental Brothers?
Accidental Brothers follows the life histories of two sets of identical male twins who were born a day apart in Colombia, South America, in 1988. One pair of identical twins was born in Bogota, the capital city, and the other born in a small, remote town 150 miles to the north. But one of the little babies up in the north needed immediate care at a good hospital, so his grandmother brought him down to Bogota at the same hospital as the other twins were born, and somehow, in an amazing twist of fate, got exchanged with one of the other twins, so the wrong baby was brought back to the small town a week later. So they were essentially raised as two sets of fraternal twins when in fact they were unrelated. And they didn't know this until they were 25 when the brothers up north moved to Bogota and somebody confused a twin in one pair for a twin in the other. I went to Bogota 2 times to study them, and they are wonderful guys. And there were similarities in many personality traits between the real identical twins, despite their separate rearing. But you could see that the effects of the different environments had a role. The twins in the city had gone to high schools and good colleges. The twins up north didn't go past 5th grade. But I have to say that living with them, you could see the similarities really popping out. And the medical life histories were amazing. The one twin born in the city and raised in the city was basically symptom-free, as was his identical twin brother raised in the north. The other twin, who was raised in the city, who was not born there, had a long list of medical complaints, as did his twin brother up in the north. So even the different environments and the different access to medical care did not make a difference in their medical histories and physical health, which I find quite extraordinary.
So what did this tell you about nature versus nurture? It was too small a sample, I know, but...
Yes, but it's a very dramatic case. And so it told me a couple of things. In terms of the abilities, one could certainly see that not having access to education left an indelible stamp on those twins. But I will say that one of the twins who was raised in the small town who should have been raised in Bogota went and got himself a GED, a high school diploma, and is now finishing law school. So he always had the drive. He didn't have the opportunity. But I have also become very appreciative of extreme environments and how they influence behavior. I think that this is a very telling case in so many ways.
So what are some of the myths that you are confronted with on a regular basis that you would like to dispel right now?
One of them is that twins communicate telepathically. I have carefully reviewed the literature on that and published it in my book, Twin Myth Conceptions. I believe that twins often come to the same decisions, perform the same way, and make the same choices, but it's not as though they're communicating. Their genes simply predispose them to make these similar choices.
But the special language issue...
That's different. When we talk about special languages, this is more common in twins, but can also occur between same-age unrelated infants who are raised together. And because twins tend to spend a lot of time together and perhaps less language experience with an adult, they often will develop their own verbal expressions or physical gestures, and so this may actually hold back their language development. But this in no way implies any kind of telepathy. You know, if you think about how you may have a best friend and you and the best friend kind of exchange a glance at times, and the whole situation is summed up in that glance, that's what identical twins are so good at in so many domains of behavior.
Have you seen that YouTube video of the twins that I think they're 18 months old? Maybe they're younger than that. And they're just going, blah, 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 at each other and laughing at each other's jokes.
Yeah, Brooke, I show that to my students every semester, and I love it. And to me, that video captures the evolution of the twin bond and the so-called twin language. Those kids are hysterical, and they know what's funny, and yet we don't. But I will tell you that I spoke to a mother once who had an older child and twins, and she said that the older child can often act as a translator, telling her what the twins are up to. And I thought, isn't that interesting? Maybe a linguist could use those older siblings as research assistants to find out what's going on.
So what about the depiction of twins culturally? Identically dressed twin toddlers may delight us. Some twins, like the ones in The Shining, terrify us. There are lots of twins in mythology, twins as gods, evil twins, and so on. Why does the idea of twins so consistently captivate us?
In the arts, in mythology, in movies, in literature, twins are very convenient devices for exploring duality, good and evil, happy and sad. Now, why is the public so enchanted with twins? I think it's because we all grow up believing, and rightfully so, that we're all individuals, that we look different, we behave differently. I think that when we encounter two people who look and act so much alike, it challenges the way we think that the world works. And many of us admire and even envy the intimacy that identical twins convey. They're so accepting of one another, so non-judgmental, and who among us wouldn't want to enjoy a relationship of that kind? So for some people, seeing identical twins might almost seem claustrophobic, too much togetherness. But on the other hand, they're still intrigued by it. So I think that's why we are so captivated.
Which brings us back to that documentary, Three Identical Strangers, for a minute. There is one doctor who had some involvement with the study that the triplets were unwittingly engaged in, and she said this.
We would prefer that we have some influence over our lives. Wouldn't you rather know that, that you have some control over this? And so finding out, never mind, doesn't matter what you do. So I think it's upsetting to people to see how little influence they have, how little control they have. We don't like that. We fight that.
Genes don't tell us what to do. They may predispose us in certain ways, but ultimately, we make the choice to do something. We know that divorce has a genetic component to it, but we can choose to stay with a partner or divorce. We have a lot of control over our lives. It's just that genes may guide us in certain sorts of directions. I think a great example of that is a pair of twins we studied in Minnesota named Jack and Oscar. They were born in 1933. Jack was raised Jewish by his father in Trinidad, and Oscar was raised Catholic in Nazi Germany with his mother. Oscar was in the Hitler Youth, but he was only 12 when the war ended. These two, of course, had very different political and historical understandings, but they both coped with their rearing situations in similar ways. Jack by becoming very pro-British in Trinidad because he didn't want people to know of his German background, and Oscar becoming very pro-German because he didn't want people to know of his Jewish background. And when they met, they spoke to one another and realized that had their positions been reversed, they both would have embraced a point of view that they currently disliked. So the context in which we find ourselves certainly can make a difference. But we can choose or not choose a certain perspective or a certain way of looking at things.
You heard me refer a couple of times to nature versus nurture.
Oh, yeah.
two things separate and immutable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That is really reductive, right?
Yes. In fact, I should have probably called you on that. We never really say nature versus nurture. That's a false dichotomy that was put to rest years ago. What we talk about is nature and nurture, or nature via nurture. Nature via nurture is a nice conceptualization of that, because if you think about how you put your house together, or the occupations you have, or how your environment is constructed, you see genetic influence on your environment. You know, you choose to put certain paintings on the wall, you choose certain outfits, you choose a certain design of your home. Why do you do that? Because they're pleasing to you in some way. In an individual, nature and nurture are completely intertwined. It cannot be separated. We separate them only statistically in a population, and that can give us a good handle on what somebody's chance of having Alzheimer's or diabetes or something like that might be, but it's not totally deterministic. We know, for example, that autism has a high genetic component. We know that from twin studies, on the order of about 70%. But a given twin pair, if you have one affected child, the other one may be never, ever affected by autism. So you can't generalize from the population to the individual. You can only use as a very rough guide.
So you have a fraternal twin. Do you ever wish you had an identical one?
You know, I've thought about that sometimes. I'd never want to give up my fraternal twin, but I think more that I wish we were triplets and there was a fraternal and an identical. I think it would be kind of fun. I am fascinated by identical twins and the intimacy that they share and the similarities that they display. So I've often wondered what it would be like, but I'm very happy with my situation as it is.
Sometimes I wish I had an evil twin.
There's no such thing.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Nancy Siegel is a professor of psychology at California State University at Fullerton and director of its Twin Studies program, and the author of Accidental Brothers, The Story of Twins Exchanged at Birth, and The Power of Nature and Nurture.
I wish I had an evil twin.
That's it for this week's show. On the Media is produced by Alana Casanova-Burgess, Micah Lowinger, Leah Fetter, and John Hanrahan. We had more help from Asa Chaturvedi and Samantha Maldonado. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineers this week were Sam Baer and Josh Hahn. Katya Rogers is our executive producer. Jim Schachter is WNYC's vice president for news. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. Bob Garfield will be back next week. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
Down and down it goes.
On the Media is supported by the Ford Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio.
Sometimes.